Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly. The films, Divide and Conquer, the story of Roger Ailes, Happy as Lazaro, hope that's the right pronunciation, and The House That Jack Built. Is that Jack Welch, or is that the great Aretha Franklin song?
You will find out in just a little while as I get to it. But let's do the films in the order that you just named them. The theme that we have in common this week is that each one of these movies has a person's name in the title. And the first one is Divide and Conquer, the story of Roger Ailes, which is, you will not be surprised to hear, about Roger Ailes. Among many other things, the founder and deviser and honcho for a very long time of Fox News. And it is, in a genre that's been sort of popular nowadays, the political documentary. It is very much a documentary about Roger Ailes, directed by Alexis Bloom. And Roger Ailes has been a hugely important force in the present-day media, going back quite a long way, actually. He first started his great rise to power when one day he sort of pulled Richard Nixon aside and said, in a media milieu, and said, what you need is a consultant. You need somebody who can tell you how to be on television and how to make the most use of television. And Nixon was in desperate need of such advice at that time in his career, and so he accepted it. And that was what started Roger Ailes on his way, not only to great media prominence, but to great conservative prominence. And eventually Roger Ailes did found and run for a long time Fox News, and he was brought down not all that long ago by sexual problems, which is to say he was accused very credibly of having been a sexual predator and come onto all kinds of women in all kinds of awful ways and put their careers in danger and put them in danger and so forth and so on. And that eventually brought him down, and he died not too terribly long after all of that kind of hit the media itself. So Divide and Conquer, the story of Roger Ailes, is a very well-made documentary. As a movie, it has no particular originality to it. It just kind of tells the basic story. And it is more about Ailes' actual rise to power and the meaning of the influence that he exerted in the media world, his rather troubled relationship with Rupert Murdoch, who owned the Fox News empire, although Ailes was the one who ran it. It's much more about those things than it is about the sexual scandals that eventually brought him down, although they are very much a part of the movie as well. As is normal in this kind of movie, we have a whole lot of archival footage. We also have some talking head footage from people who knew Roger Ailes. One, interestingly enough, is the actor Austin Pendleton, who turns out to have been a very, very old acquaintance of Ailes, going back to when they were both very young. Also Glenn Beck himself, a somewhat important and controversial media presence in his day. And it's a very watchable and interesting documentary. If you're interested in politics, if you're interested in media, and especially if you are interested in the convergence of the two, one of the moments in it that I just found the most amazing and quite fascinating to look at, and I mean, I knew about this before, and I'm sure that many of our listeners do, but there's a moment when on one of the Fox programs, they're talking about how Donald Trump loves Fox. Donald Trump loves to watch us. We know he watches us because, after all, you know, he says things that we've said. And they say, hey, listen, Mr. President, if you're watching, how about blinking the lights at the White House right now? And, you know, sure enough, in one of the rooms in the White House, the lights blink on and off. Trump is watching and listening and just, you know, having a lovely time with all of this. And it is just one more little confirmation of the intimate bond between Donald J. Trump and the right-wingers at Fox News. And it's sort of chilling in its way and sort of funny in its way and sort of pathetic in its way, in my opinion, that a president would want to acknowledge that he had that sort of – that he was influenced and spent that much of his time with one particular news outlet. Anyway, Divide and Conquer is a very, very interesting documentary. Again, not particularly original or imaginative as a movie, but it gets the story well told, and it's a story certainly worth knowing. Our second film from today is so different in just about every conceivable manner. It's a European movie, co-produced by resources from a number of countries, but it's basically an Italian film, and it's in Italian. And it was directed by one Alice Rohrwacher, and it is called Happy as Lazzaro. You pronounced the movie almost correctly when you said the title at the beginning. And it's a very, very nice, lovely movie. It's been showing up on quite a number of 10 best of 2018 lists lately, and I think that it sort of deserves to belong there. I haven't yet finalized my 10 best list. We'll be getting to that in one of our upcoming broadcasts, Jill. But I think 2018 has not been a great year. Happy as Lazzaro may or may not end up on my list. It certainly is a contender. It's a very, very nice movie without being quite an excellent movie. Happy as Lazzaro is, in fact, about a young man named Lazzaro, and he seems to be maybe a little bit mentally slow, although maybe it's just that he is such a sweet, lovely person that he kind of seems that way. He's kind of like Dostoevsky's immortal character, the idiot, in that way. He's not really an idiot. He's just a lovely, almost saintly kind of a guy. But he seems to a lot of other people because he's so always willing to cooperate and do things for others and so forth. He seems like sort of an idiot to others. And he lives on basically a tobacco plantation in rural Italy with a whole bunch of other peasants who live a whole lot of people of different generations in a single room here, a single room there, very, very unpleasant conditions. And it's a tobacco plantation. What they're all involved in is turning out tobacco and tobacco and tobacco for the marquise who owns this plantation, who is known as the Queen of Cigarettes. And yes, the health hazards of cigarettes are very much acknowledged in this movie, although it takes place before those things were really widely known. Anyway, that's the basic milieu of it. And so we have all of these peasants, including Lazzaro, who live and operate in this milieu. And another person is the Marquise's son, who is named Tancredi, and who is a very sort of handsome, skinny young man who decides he hates his environment. He doesn't like his way his mother treats the peasants who work for her and so forth. And he arranges with Lazzaro to fake a kidnapping of himself so that he can live for a while off in the sort of wilderness surrounding the plantation with Lazzaro and just sort of be on his own for a while. Well, this leads to a string of events that leads to the plantation itself coming to the attention of the authorities in ways that it was not in their attention before, and it turns out that this whole thing is a totally illegal operation. These peasants don't realize that sharecropping is now illegal in Italy. They have been living there and giving over all of the fruits of their labors or the tobacco leaves of their labors to the marquise for year after year, and they don't realize that this is all totally illegal. So the authorities now move in, break up the whole operation. But this casts the peasants adrift. They find themselves now transplanted to the big city. They have no idea what to do in the big city. They're just sort of living hand to mouth now. They were actually better off economically on the plantation itself. Lazzaro himself has a terrible accident and sort of becomes Rip Van Winkle or Rip Van Lazzaro. He apparently is unconscious for quite a number of years, comes back to consciousness again, and goes about reconnecting himself with the peasants, all of whom, again, are now transplanted to the big city. So this is a story, as you can tell from my little synopsis, which is full of magic realism. It's a story that could not take place in real life, and it has all sorts of touches that really are basically supernatural, but they're touches. They're not main themes of the movie, except for the fact that Lazzaro appears to be unconscious for a number of years, lying out in the fields, comes to, and then goes about reconnecting with people he used to know back before his period of unconsciousness. The movie idealizes Lazzaro. It idealizes even most of the peasants in ways that the great Spanish filmmaker Luis Buñuel, who dealt with peasants from time to time in his films never would have done. He had a very realistic view of the fact that peasants may be oppressed and downtrodden, but they're no better than the rest of us. This movie really does idealize Lazaro, makes him into, again, almost a saintly kind of a figure, and idealizes a whole lot of the other peasants as well, even though a lot of the things they do are not exactly admirable. And that's the part of the movie that I found a bit difficult to take. It really is a very sentimental film. But if you can get over that sentimentality or accept that sentimentality or just take it on and decide to love it, it's a very, very sweet movie. It certainly is a million unexpected twists and turns to it. I had a great time watching it. So again, if you can take a certain, maybe even verging on overdose of sentimentality, it really is one of the year's most likable and quite riveting to watch movies. Finally, I would like to get to a movie by Lars von Trier. Lars von Trier, probably the most important Scandinavian filmmaker working in movies today, The House That Jack Built. Lars von Trier is a provocateur. He loves to provoke difficulty and controversy and even outrage from time to time. He has made some movies that are very, very popular, and people are always talking about him when they talk about the European art film. Dancer in the Dark is probably his best-known movie, starring Björk. Also, Breaking the Wave is a very well-known movie of his, and again, a very sort of a controversial film. He was also the prime mover behind the Dogma 95 movement in the middle of the 1990s, Dogma 95 being a style of filmmaking that involved absolutely no trickery of any kind. The camera just filmed events while they were acted out. No special effects, no music, no this, no that. And he was a prime mover behind that, and then almost as soon as he had gotten that whole thing going as a movement, he then totally broke all the rules by making Dancer in the Dark, which is a hugely elaborate production. So again, he's a provocateur. And movies like Dancer in the Dark and Breaking the Waves really show that. The House That Jack Built is one of his most provocative movies ever, which is really saying something. It stars Matt Dillon, it's an English language film, by the way, as a serial killer. And what we have is a movie that is divided down into five, they call them incidents, which are different killings that the Matt Dillon character, Jack, that he perpetrates. Other people in the movie include Uma Thurman is in it for a while. The very, very fine German actor Bruno Ganz is in it. Most of the way through, he plays a disembodied voice, somebody who Jack is talking to, a guy named Verge, but then he becomes an actual character in the movie in the last part of it. We also learn that Jack is an architect, and he regards each one of his murders, again, he is a serial killer, each one of his murders is a work of art. He is also involved in building a house because he is an architect, but he's never quite happy with the way the house is going, and he keeps knocking it down and starting over again. But basically, the movie is about his killings, about his murders. And they are very nasty murders. What he does is murder women. And the women are seen as being basically just sort of dumb cows who sort of deserve what they get because they're not smart enough to see it coming. And that's the kind of thing that Lars von Trier, at his nastiest, is prone to putting into his movies. And I must emphasize right now that even though it's being released now in the Christmas season, The House That Jack Built is not a movie that partakes of the season of the spirit of this season. It is a very nasty movie with all of these very ugly killings of women one after another. Most of the way through, it's kind of insufferable. And I should also mention now that it's about 2.5 hours long. And is just crammed with one sort of ugly incident after another. What makes it worthwhile if you are into horror movies and if you're into crime movies and murder movies is the fact that it does have a certain inventiveness in it. There's a certain kind of imaginative quality to the way Jack's aspirations as an architect and his aspirations as a serial killer kind of come together. And then in approximately the last 15 or 20 minutes of this 2.5 hour movie, it becomes, to my way of thinking, absolutely marvelous. And now this is a spoiler, but hey, folks, I got to give it here because it's very important. In the later part of the movie, Jack goes to hell. He is in the middle of his most elaborate architectural feat and his most elaborate murder feat ever. When everything goes astray, Verge, who we've been hearing as a disembodied voice, becomes an actual figure in the movie, and he turns out to be perhaps Virgil, as in the Aeneid, and escorts jacked down to hell. And the last 15 or 20 minutes is maybe the best visualization of what Hades would be like that I have ever seen in a movie. It's just wonderful. It's still pretty nasty, but it's pretty terrific. Matt Dillon is not a great actor. He's kind of an okay actor. The movie is not a great crime movie, not a great serial killer, but it's a killer movie, but it's an okay one. But at the end, when it gives us its vision of hell, I think it really becomes quite worthwhile if you like this sort of thing. So if in the holiday season you want to go off and have yourself a truly hellish experience in all kinds of ways, see the house that Jack built. Otherwise, you'd be better off with a conspicuously sweet movie like Happy as Lazaro. And that is my There's Always a Name in the Title These Days story this week, Joe.
Thank you very much, David Sterrett, a name. Films in Focus, the films Divide and Conquer, the story of Roger Ailes, Happy as Lazaro, and The House That Jack Built.